Hello, welcome to the Law Report. I'm Damien Carrick. After 10 long years, the International Criminal Court has finally handed down its first verdict. Congolese warlord Thomas Lubanga has been found guilty of crimes against humanity. That's later. First, to the suburbs of Canberra and a ruling by the Supreme Court of the ACT that raises as many questions as it answers. Should people be able to leave their assets to whomever they like? Or should courts be able to intervene if a will discriminates unfairly between family members? Mariam Omari was an elderly Muslim woman who lived in Canberra. In accordance with Islamic tradition, her will left 4 shares to her sons, but only half shares to her daughters. One of her sons is Mustafa Omari.
She wanted an Islamic will because she was born as a Muslim, she lived all her life as a Muslim, and she died as a Muslim. And during her lifetime, she was practicing her faith, including prayers, fasting, performance of pilgrimage to Mecca, and other compulsory aspects of Islam. And one of the requirements from a Muslim when comes to the will.
One daughter, Fatima, successfully overturned Mariam's will by establishing that her mum was suffering dementia at the time she executed the document. But what if Mariam had been in full command of her faculties? What would a court have had to say about her unequal division of assets? Two people with a lot of knowledge in this area are Imran Khan, a Wollongong lawyer who's drafted about 1,000 traditional Muslim wills, and Professor Prue Vines from the Law Faculty at UNSW.
Well, Mariam Omari was a woman who came to Australia some time ago. She spoke Kurdish, she didn't speak English much, and she was a very devout Muslim. The case is about the will that she ultimately made, but it's complicated by the fact that there was a question about whether at the time she made the will, she was actually suffering from advanced Alzheimer's disease and therefore didn't actually have the capacity to make a will.
How and where was this will executed?
It was executed in circumstances where her sons took her to a restaurant where a friend of theirs was. She didn't read or write in either English or her own language. And so when they talked to her about what she was doing, she could say things like, I want a will that's a Muslim will, but she really had to rely on people reading it to her for her to know what it said or not. There's no question that they weren't more or less writing down what they thought she wanted. The difficulty is that ultimately she didn't have capacity. Because the will that was drafted was a Muslim will, for each one share to a son, it gave a half share to the daughter.
And I believe that Mrs. Omari had 8 children. She had 3 sons and 5 daughters. So each of those 3 sons got a full share, and each of her daughters got a half of
it. Got a half share. And one of the daughters has challenged the will.
One of those daughters, Fatima Omari, sought to dispute the will on the basis that she lacked testamentary capacity. What evidence was presented to support that assertion?
There was evidence as far back as 5 years before, in 1998, from a GP that said he thought she had showed signs of dementia then. So there was actually quite a long-standing set of both medical and reports, including reports by the sons who were executors of this particular will, saying for different transactions that they thought that she didn't have capacity.
So what did the judge find?
Well, the judge found that she didn't have capacity. Yeah. And of course, because that was her only will, that meant that the intestacy rules were going to apply. And the intestacy rules mean that sons and daughters get equal shares.
Prue Vines, what would have happened if the judge had said, well, no, she did have testamentary capacity? Where would that have left the daughter?
Well, that's interesting because, of course, if the daughter didn't like getting the half share, she would have the right to go to the court and make a family provision claim. Now, that right to go there doesn't mean she automatically gets a right to get what she wants, but it would be extremely unusual for an Australian court to say that it was all right generally for daughters to get a half share and sons to get a full share.
Tell me about this idea of family provision.
Well, family provision is the process where legislation's been set up, largely because in the up to the 19th century, women were in a very bad position compared to men, so that right up in New South Wales until 1916, a man was entitled to leave his property wherever he wished. He could leave it away from his wife and away from his children. The wife herself didn't actually have any right to either of those things, including the children. That's what led to this legislation that we now have, which we call family provision in some jurisdictions and testator's family maintenance in others, which actually means that if somebody takes the will to court and argues that for various reasons they haven't been adequately provided for in the will, the court can more or less remake the will so that it more adequately provides for the people. And generally, certainly in the last 20 or 30 years, treating children equally, unless they have very special needs and things, has been more or less the position.
Let's come back to some of those cases in a moment. Let's now talk to Imran Khan. Imran, you're a Wollongong-based lawyer. One of your areas of work is providing Muslim wills to the Muslim community. What do you make of this Omari and Omari decision?
It certainly raises a lot of issues to the Muslim community at large. One of the things that I think would be interesting would be if the will was found to be valid and if it was challenged by the daughter, how the courts would interpret it. They have to obviously balance the daughter's competing needs with the mother's wishes to uphold her religion. And so it certainly would be interesting to see how the court balances the issue of religion and equality between children.
Do you know, have there been cases along these lines decided before?
I'm not aware that there are any cases decided. I know that, I have knowledge of one particular matter which isn't in the courts yet, where a mother who was left with a smaller share of an estate than her children is looking to possibly challenge the will on the basis that she should be provided for a greater amount. And I think we need to give some background history here as to why the will is set out in the way it is. I mean, we've done a lot of Islamic wills in the Muslim community here in Sydney and Wollongong. And in preparing those wills, we've consulted a number of Islamic sheikhs or scholars about the wills, and my understanding is that the background to that is the sons predominantly get more than daughters because they also inherit not only the estate but also the responsibilities that come with it. So generally sons would have a responsibility to take care of their parents and also their unmarried sisters, but in this case the mother is arguing that the sons aren't fulfilling their duty to take care of her and therefore she should be provided with a greater amount than what's provided in the Islamic will.
So you do see cases where women in the community see these traditions as unfair?
Yes, you do. And Malaysia is a very interesting example where they've sort of addressed this issue. Whereas in old days, you'd have traditionally the house would stay at home and take care of the children and the husband would go out and work. And then if a husband was to pass away, because the mother wasn't working, she wouldn't have a large asset pool that she could draw on. And then if the sons get a large inheritance and they don't take care of her, she's left with no recourse. So in Malaysia, they've actually modified it somewhat to say that, well, because the mother's staying at home, she should also have some right to the family home and some of the joint assets, and they've actually created a scenario where the mother can make a claim for a certain proportion of the estate before it gets divided up amongst the children.
How common is it among the Muslim community in Australia for there to be wills in accordance with Muslim traditions?
We've done over 1,000 Islamic wills in the last, say, 4 or 5 years that we've been doing them. And obviously one of the requirements is that daughters get a half share, whereas sons get a full share. And there's a number of other different scenarios as to other relatives who can also inherit.
I mean, I'm very aware that the sons are supposed to look after unmarried daughters and so on. And it seems to me that a better reflection would be to draft a will with a trust where the sons, at least as to part of their share, were supposed to look after the daughter of the testator. One of the problems is that it's not just the whether you own stuff or not, whether you have the money or the property or not. It's also the level of control. And one of the things we've seen in the family provision jurisdiction over the years is an increasing desire by the courts and by women to come into situations where it was traditional for a woman not to get any control and to, for example, be given a life estate, which ended when she died, but which she didn't have much control over during her life. And the courts have been saying, well, women are capable of having control of these things. It's no longer the case for many women that they don't actually know how to handle these things, and we should be giving them more control.
Prue, so far we've been talking about Muslim Australians, but of course wills where daughters do worse than sons are very common in that most iconic old-school Aussie section of our community, farming families.
Well, they're less common now, but there was a very, very strong push for a long time, probably until well into the 1980s or 1990s, where if a farming family wanted to leave the farm to the eldest son and leave the daughters either unprovided for or with very little, that was regarded as reasonable because the farm had to go on. If you broke the farm up, you were going to destroy it. So dividing things into equal shares between sons and daughters wasn't working. And people have spent a lot of time trying to draft contracts and create situations so that the farm would remain intact. Now, under family provision, you just can't do that. It's just got harder and harder and harder until the High Court decided that you can't make any kind of arrangement unless you make a complete gift inter vivos. That is during the lifetime. You can't create a situation where family provision can't look at the property. You can't say this farm isn't part of the property anymore. That's or do any of those estate management techniques that people used to try to do.
Yeah, that's a good point you raise there, Prue. I was just going to say that similar to the Islamic community, the will, as you all know, would operate after you pass away. But in the Islamic scenario, there's nothing stopping someone making greater provision for a beneficiary while they're still alive. So if someone feels that a daughter would be disadvantaged by getting a smaller proportion, they can give a gift to their daughter whilst they're still alive to cater for that.
They effectively do get a full share, it's just they get some of it before the death and some of it after the death.
That's right, and I think some of it goes back to cultural issues in that, similar to the farm scenario where people try and preserve the farm and preserve the asset as one piece, when a daughter would get married off, she would go and join her husband's family, and then if she was getting a larger proportion of an estate, then that would be splitting up the estate and going to her husband's family, whereas if the sons keep it, then it stays in the one family.
A fascinating mix of cultural tradition and economic and business imperatives, both in the farming communities and in the Muslim community.
Yes.
Imran Khan, there's a tension here, isn't there, between a person's right to leave their assets to whomever they choose and society's interest in promoting fairness?
Well, there is. I mean, it's not just with Islamic rules, it's with any type of will.
Prue Vines, do you think there's a tension here between a person's right to leave their assets to whomever they choose and according to whatever tradition or business imperative that they may feel should be paramount, and on the other hand, society's interest in promoting fairness and equality, gender equality and whatever else?
Yes. Well, yes, I do. I think it's a fundamental tension. It's been very traditional in our society for people to be able to feel that they can leave their property however they want. But at the same time, for example, in the case that Imran was talking about, if somebody's very wealthy and they leave nothing to their children who aren't well off, then that burden may well fall on the state. So we have an interest in that burden not falling on the state, as well as an interest in people within the same family being treated more or less equally and so on. There are a whole lot of competing policy ideas that are being played out within this, including the increasing primacy of the spouse. You know, 100 years ago, a spouse wasn't regarded as a next of kin. Now the spouse is the primary person. These changes have happened quite quickly in Australian society. And they raise many, many tensions, and not just in relation to the Islamic community, but in relation to the Aboriginal community, various other groups whose patterns and expectations don't necessarily quite fit the mainstream society. But the wonderful thing about a will generally is that you can reflect cultural values in it. The question is how far you can go before the common law starts thinking, well, no, we're not prepared to accept that.
And I understand that the Muslim community in Australia is, demographically speaking, very young. So these sorts of issues are probably going to come to the fore over the next years and decades.
Well, apparently the average age is around 16 or 17. I think it's a harbinger of what's to come.
This case obviously raises some issues on the Islamic laws of inheritance, but as Prua said, there will most likely be further cases to come once this gets greater attention and people go about enforcing their rights and preparing Islamic wills. So I think it's something to keep an eye on in the future, definitely.
Imran Khan, who works with RMB lawyers in Wollongong, speaking there with Professor Prue Vines from the Law Faculty at the University of New South Wales.